Howdy everyone, welcome back to your hilarious and bona fide favourite pop culture podcast, Culture Vulture. Sorry, that was kind of weird. But
I was like, does she want me to sing with her?
Oh my god, speaking of, Laura did a cocktail hour, which, have we talked about this?
We definitely have not, and we're not going to.
Oh,
no,
well, anyway,
we shall.
First thing, I didn't really know what a cocktail hour was, because obviously I haven't been to a wedding. So, second of all, sorry, Laura sung American Boy or American Girl, don't know what it was, doesn't really matter. It was fucking amazing. And
stop it.
That's all I have to say, because I feel like we joke about making songs on GarageBand all the time.
We do. But famously,
please let it be known, if she did, it'd be good.
Once a year, I come out of retirement and sing at someone's wedding.
Was Stanley Tucci Light playing the guitar?
Yeah, that was new for me. I also famously cannot. I get the ick in the biggest way at the idea of dating someone who is a musician, works in music.
Yes.
Anything. And I used to sing in a past life, and the idea of singing with someone and dating them, so basically Rupert, this is so boring, but we needed someone to play the guitar, and in a past life Rupert could play the guitar, so I actually said he would do it before asking him, and then he always wanted to practice, and I actually refused because it gave me the ick so much.
Because sorry, what if someone walks past our apartment and sees us playing together?
We went away on a family holiday and he brought the guitar because I'd refused to practice with him and the wedding was a week away. Oh. And he basically locked me in a room and made me practice American Boy 50 times.
Okay, so seriously, Laura's thing is date the person that makes you cringe. She's married him, but she just won't let him make her cringe anymore. Okay, I have a story, and Ruby might cut it out, but Ruby's boyfriend, who we love to death, he plays a guitar, and one time, their flatmates told us that he was, cooking something in the kitchen, and then there was a break, something was cooking, and he had some time, so he got his guitar, and he, leant up against the wall, put one foot up, and was, strumming the guitar, and the flatmate walked out, and he was like, I don't know why I was doing that. It's giving Jason Mraz.
No, it's giving Ken in the Barbie movie.
It's giving Fedora.
I don't know what it is. I'd love to know if this is a universal thing. I mean, obviously not. Musicians, date a lot of people. But
and most people, I reckon, would be all over it.
Maybe I want to be the star of the relationship.
Yeah.
Maybe
I... No, we've talked about that, actually. Because, you and Rupert... And when we were doing Enneagram numbers, you were both so extroverted that when you started dating, it was like, oh my god, well, I want to be the one that hosts this dinner party and blah, blah, blah. And Rupert was also really good at it. And so I think you ended up loving it, obviously.
I mean, we're still here.
Anyway.
This is a tangent.
This has nothing to do with the episode, which is all about being a teenage girl in your 20s.
And joy. So you know what?
And joy. We're actually talking about something that doesn't bring you joy right now, which is playing a guitar with Stanley.
Which is getting the ick. Which, Lucy, what describes your week? Let's get this thing back on track.
Well, being a teenage girl in my 20s describes my week. I have basically been... Well, actually, I've been doing this for a year now, or maybe my whole life. Just the only thing I want to listen to or rewatch or read is shit that I loved as a kid. And as we're going to... get to in the pod, this isn't some random switch that happened to me that was oh my god, I need to go feel nostalgic about all this stuff. It was literally everything that we watched and loved as a kid is being repackaged to us, or as a teenager I should say, and it's all kind of relevant again, and it's just fun. I don't know, I'm just I don't want to be an adult for a second, let me just be a teenager. So that describes my week.
I cannot believe chicken soup for the teenage soul.
No.
When I saw that in your news.
I know. No, it's chicken soup for the teenage soul, hard stuff. And then there's all the stuff about depression, and I've underlined stuff. It's from when I was a kid, I'm like, oh, Lucy, the writing was on the wall, babe. No, speaking of getting the ick, reading through that, I was like, darling, it wasn't that deep. But when you're a teenager, everything feels that deep.
Those chicken soup books bring back memories. And they're not good memories.
No, and guess what? They're poorly written and poorly edited.
I would actually love to reread.
Yeah, well.
I'm going to do that this week.
Yeah. And, like, not poorly, that's kind of awful for me to say because they're, like, contributors writing about their stories. But it's like, you know, right now we're used to reading really polished shit.
Yeah.
And I feel like those were just compilations of, I don't know, raw young people's stories. And then, like, I'm always like, you wrote this when you were, like, 12. Now how do you feel that it's out in the world as
I was just
going to
say that. It's anonymized, right? Or is it, like...
I think some of them... No, some of them are. I think you can, but some of them right. are like, name is there, the byline is there. Luckily, chicken soup's kind of not that relo anymore, so no one's, except for me, is going and digging
except
back
for
up.
And we're you. Going deep in the archives. Stay tuned next week for a full
for a chicken soup review. That could be your shit you should cook about, and everyone thinks that it's chicken soup, but it's actually... But you're vegetarian, so...
Leave it with me. Leave
look,
it with me.
A workaround, corn soup or something. Anyway, what? Corn chowder.
Oh, this
tell
is so derailed.
Tell me what describes your week.
My week, very similar. It was kind of a return to my teenage self, or more my childhood self. My parents are over at the moment, and we went and did like a full This Is Your Life tour of my old school, my... Mm. Well, Poor Rupert got dragged around this as well. Our old house, like my nana's old house, and basically did a wee tour of my life, which was very strange because, so I grew up here, but I moved to New Zealand when I was a kid. And in New Zealand, I very much felt like from New Zealand, but also from England. And since we're coming back to the UK, I wondered how I would feel and if I'd feel like Brit or I don't know. And it was interesting because the more and more time goes on, I'm like, I really am a Kiwi.
Oh, okay. I was going to ask you, like, what do you feel now that you've actually been there for a wee while? Like, do you feel closer to home or closer to New Zealand or what?
I don't know. It'll be interesting going back to New Zealand and seeing how I feel. But I think definitely being here, I mean, I literally was telling you before, but I said pashing in the office this week and got absolutely ripped to shreds.
Do you have any plans to come home?
I think we're going to come home for Christmas for a visit.
Aww. Cute. Well, I won't be here, but...
You won't even... Yeah.
I don't know if I can be here, so I don't care about it.
I got plans to go to Lisbon pretty soon.
Yeah, well, so do I, but I'm fucking... Everyone's sick of hearing me wank on about my visa. Anyway, Laura, I'll move us along because Ruby's done us a very good and a very extensive Should We Care this week.
Okay.
First story, which I was going to talk about whether she wrote about it or not, but naturally she's one of the girlies and she wrote about it because she gets us. Have you heard about The Blind Side and the drama happening with Michael Orr from The Drive? From The Blind Side.
Haven't read a lot, but definitely saw bits.
So we know this famous movie with Sandra Bullock in it. She is part of the Tui family who, I'm using quotes, adopt this black football player. Well, he wasn't a football player at the start, but he turned out to be a really, really talented and then successful NFL player. There was this big movie made about it and... Everyone at the start was like, wow, what a beautiful movie, that's so good. And then time went on, it was like, wow, this is actually kind of white savory. Like, the people centered in this movie are the white family that have saved him. And that is not to say that it, like, isn't a beautiful thing that they did for him. It was just to say that the story we were all told sort of focused on the wrong people, maybe.
The Hollywood version.
Yeah, the Hollywood version. So it's just come out that he... thought that he was legally adopted by this family, and that's also what the movie sort of depicted, etc., etc. But it turns out he's filed a lawsuit and he's alleging that he was tricked into signing conservatorship papers and told that he was adopted, but he was actually being signed over into a conservatorship. Now, we all know what a conservatorship is because we have heard about Britney Spears and actually quite a few of, like, other Disney stars or other child stars that have come forward saying this was a similar thing with me. So the lawsuit then states that the TUI's used their power as conservators to negotiate a deal with 20th Century Fox that paid them and their biological children millions of dollars in royalties from The Blind Side, again, allegedly. Michael claims that he only learned the details about this conservatorship in February this year, saying that, like, when he signed it, there was no consequential difference between being adopted and entering into a conservatorship, which, as we now know, is just not the case. But what I will say, and this is where I think a lot of people, they haven't gone this far into the reading or trying to find out more. They've seen the headlines about it and been like, holy fuck, that's really bad. And it is bad if it did happen. Obviously, this is all alleged right now. But in response, Leanne and Sean Toohey, the parents that adopted him, have said, it's upsetting to think we would make money off any of our children, but we're going to love Michael at 37 like we loved him at 16, and that they have no problem ending the conservatorship. They allege that to get Michael into university, he had to be part of the family, but because he was over 18, a conservatorship was the only option. Now, whether that's true, because I'm not a lawyer, obviously, but this is publicly, this is their statement, I'm like, okay, that's actually quite an important bit of information that he couldn't actually be adopted. It had to be this type of legal document. Like, and I feel like that's been missing in a lot of the discourse I've been seeing.
So what are the next steps with it? Is there like a case? Is there?
Well, I guess because it's a lawsuit, it goes to, I'm not sure if it's a public trial. I'm not sure. Some of these things we won't know about. Some of them will play out publicly, but.
Oh, wow. I definitely care about that story.
Me too, because you would feel like the wool has been pulled over your eyes, even if it was the only case. Why was it not describe to you that, like, this is how we have to do it and this is to get you into uni, and you would, and you know, them saying that they didn't make that much money or they didn't really make money off of the fucking Blind Side movie, I don't really buy that, because money would have changed hands somewhere. But anyway, just, I care about that story as well. I'm like shook.
Definitely.
Next story. Okay, I wonder if you've, these are from me, and I wonder, the next two are from me, and I wonder if you've heard about them. They're very TikTok-y. So first of all, have you heard about the Unwell Network?
No, and this is why I love coming here.
I know. This is why I'm like, there's a mix of like traditional celebrities, but then also I'm like, I fucking want to talk about all the shit I'm seeing on TikTok. So do you know who Alex Cooper is?
No.
Alex Cooper hosts Call Her Daddy, which is like
Yes.
The podcast of all podcasts for celebrities to go on to clear their name or air their dirt or whatever. Alex Cooper has just, well, she had originally created, like, I don't know what they called it, like a media agency or something with her partner. And now, as a subsidiary of this, like, umbrella company, they've launched what they've called the Unwell Network, which is like a talent agency, and they've signed, do you know who Alex Earl is?
Yes.
Yeah, so they've signed Alex Earl, and they've signed, do you know who Madeline Argy is?
This is a real who's who.
This is a real who's who. She's like an it girl of UK TikTok. She dates Central C. She's like,
oh,
she just,
yeah,
yeah, she talks about lots of, I don't know, funny stories that she's had. She does these car videos. Anyway, they're kind of like two it girls of TikTok of 2023. And Alex Cooper is like the daddy it girl. Like, she's at the top. And anyway, she signed these two influencers. No one really knows what the Unwell Network is, but I'm guessing it's going to be like podcasts. It could go into reality TV. Like, I don't really know. But anyway, I care about that because I love learning about this industry, and I'm like, sorry, that's actually massive if Alex Cooper, Alex Earl, and Madeline Argy are, even if you don't know who these people are, you will, or Gen Z / Gen Alpha definitely do.
Well, that's the thing. And do you also think it kind of signals like a move to that kind of talent agency?
Yes.
And like more
yes,
of these popping
yes.
up?
Yep. I'm like, this is the important stuff moving forward. Like, honestly.
Yeah.
I don't reckon in a few years people aren't really going to care about, obviously there'll be like the A-list movie stars, but I'm like, they don't seem very, like, not attainable, but they don't seem very relatable. And I just think these girlies are doing it. And I don't know. It just feels very self-made. I'm like, it's just cool. You've gotten on TikTok, you filmed your own shit, and now you're like making your dreams happen. So go you.
I am very interested to see what it means.
I know. So do you care or not? Is that one that I can care about on my own?
No, I think I care. I think I care for what comes next.
I know. I'm so interested in that. Okay, my next one. Addison Rae is dropping singles from what's called the Lost Album of hers. And I reckon, and I'm not alone, she's going to be like the next It pop girl. You heard about this?
Well, I just want to say, you seem to have your finger on the pulse with this because you also called Miley Cyrus and...
I know.
I just saw you post about this and I was mind blown. It was the first I'd seen of it, but I remember you calling this. So I think when it comes to pop, you've got your finger on the pulse a little bit. I'm going to say it.
Everyone, that's actually a really good point that I wasn't going to talk about because I forgot about it. I literally 2 days ago was like, Miley Cyrus, the next person that needs to like revisit all their old shit is Miley Cyrus. Like, I want to hear We Got the Party with the Jonas Brothers in 2023. I want to hear Everybody Makes Mistakes, Hannah Montana, but Miley's version. And now, and I got sent this by a few people, like, she is doing something that's revisiting her old shit. I don't really know what it is, but it's like...
No one knows what it is, but there was the posters, right?
Yeah, that were like revisiting her old songs.
Old lyrics.
Yeah, so I'm not going to lie. I do, I agree. I feel like I called that, but in a coincidental way, not in a way where I was like, get me Miley on the phone, she needs to do this. Anyway, Addison Rae, she basically had these songs that like went cult viral on TikTok but were never released. Like, there's a song called To Die For that's like kind of turned into like a cult anthem. Mm-hmm. And apparently Charlie XCX is going to be on this when it releases, which means it's going to be fucking huge.
Yeah.
Because like pop, Charlie XCX, yeah, banger. And she's kind of doing Easter eggs like Taylor Swift does. Like, her website's just this like bubblegum thing and like song lyrics and whatever. And then she tweeted, dug up a few of the leaks from the Lost Album, and she said that whatever it is going to be out on August the 18th. So tomorrow.
One of my favorite things about living in New Zealand is that whenever anything drops, you get it first.
Yes.
Everything.
Yes.
You'd be watching and the rest of the world has to wait 9 hours for the Adele album, but you're sitting there,
yes,
midnight, listening away. Full day ahead of everyone.
The other day I just put it in the news that are like, Olivia Rodrigo's new single, Bad Idea, right? It's out and it's good, or let me know your thoughts. And everyone was like, it's not out, blah, 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 blah. And I was like, do you all forget that Mama lives in New Zealand?
She's out here living like, in the future, babies.
I do be in the future. Anyway, I really care about the Addison Rae thing because I feel like she was really reprimanded is the wrong word, but like she tried to enter pop a few years ago and Everyone was like, fuck off, you're a TikToker, blah, blah, blah. So she put it to bed and now she's coming back and she's sort of created this cult like scarcity thing. And seriously, I think other people are going to care. Do you or no?
I definitely care. I care about anything pop.
I was going to say, and music trends is like your bread and butter. Like, you got to be all over that shit.
I may not be over the Unwell Network, but
yes.
When it comes to pop
but
music,
a music trend or two.
It's the high-low over here, everybody.
I have two more. One of these ones I saw just before getting on the mic, so I put this in, and another one's from Ruby. God, I know this is a long should we care, but this is just long. a lot of pop culture stuff. Stevie Nicks wrote about watching Daisy Jones and the Six. Did you see this?
No, but please.
Okay. Well, everyone knows that Daisy Jones and the Six was based off, everyone says loosely, but kind of closely, off of Fleetwood Mac. And Stevie Nicks has just come out and said, or she tweeted, or X, or whatever we call it, just finished watching Daisy Jones and the Six for the second time. In the beginning, it wasn't really my story, but Riley seamlessly soon became my story.
What?
It brought back memories that made me feel like a ghost watching my own story. It was very emotional for me. I just wish Christine could have seen it. She would have loved it. Hopefully it will continue. And I'm like, goosebumps.
That goosebumps. Can I just say that I feel like that never happens? Like, very rarely do you get the people that are, you know, these things are loosely based off or very much based off coming out and endorsing it. Very rarely. So the fact.
They won't even endorse, like, people that have made documentaries on their lives because of the way that they're portrayed. Totally. And things like that. And this is, like, For Taylor Jenkins Reid, that is the biggest kudos you could ever get.
I'm going to rewatch it.
I know. How good is that? And the fact that she was like, hopefully it will continue ... I'm like, okay, is she an executive producer on season two or what's going on here?
I hope she is. I feel like every time we do a story about Stevie Nicks, it's wonderful.
I know. She recently came out again and said that, like, she loved Taylor Swift's You're On Your Own, Kid. Like, she'd already said that she loved it so much that we talked about it on the podcast. She reiterated that shit. She is for the girls, Stevie Nicks.
She really is for the girls. Oh, that's a beautiful, definitely, definitely care about that.
I knew you would care about that. I had to bring it to, I saw her, I was like, this has got to be on the pod. Okay, last one. This one's from Ruby. And she said, sorry, this story is so dumb. Like, literally no one cares. And then she wrote, celebrities' real names. This is a random but silly one, and I feel like this kind of headline always has a moment every couple of years, but somehow it always feels kind of shocking. So I'm going to read you just some celebrities. I'm putting this in here because
it's such a peek behind the curtain that I don't even see.
It's like
I just get the story.
No, I'm obsessed with the commentary. That's why I was like, this has to make it in, because like Ruby is so unintentionally funny. Like, sorry, the story is so dumb. Like, literally nobody cares. And she's making us read it on a fucking podcast that goes out to, like, a lot of people. Anyway, I'm going to give you a couple of... No, she is. Here are a couple I found most interesting of celebrity names that you may not know are their real names. Okay, Vin Diesel's real name, Mark Vincent.
I didn't know that.
Bruno Mars's real name, Peter Jean Hernandez. Did you know that?
No. This is kind of...
Jason Sudeikis. Daniel Sudeikis.
What? What was the point?
I know. What's adjacent to a Daniel? Lana Del Rey, Elizabeth Woolridge Grant.
I did know that one.
That's the only one I did know. Snoop Dogg, Calvin Broadus, Elton John, Reginald Dwight. No, Reginald Dwight.
What? I didn't know that.
And then my favourite that Ruby didn't put in here, but just the fact that Hugh Grant's middle name is Mungo. Like Hugh Mungo. Anyway, sorry, Ruby. I don't actually really care about that, but it was interesting.
This is giving, like,
to talk about
a fact. This is like.
It's Ruby giving us some icebreakers.
We've gone from news and pop culture, and we've just come to the 51st date segment.
We just got facts. Okay, I guess, Laura, if we have to, we'll talk about being a fucking teenage girl in your 20s, because to quote myself, hell it was being a teenage girl, but right now she is literally all I want to be.
I just want to say that I saw Lucy write this article the first time and I thought it was brilliant. I then saw it pop up in another medium and I still thought it was brilliant. I don't want to say it.
It's like when you watch your Instagram, your Instagram story as if it's not you. Like you see it again. Oh, does that look good over on that
She's
side?
Going viral, people. She is absolutely going viral with this hot take.
With this hot take. So funny, because this is another thing that TikTok introduced me to, this idea of being a teenage girl in your 20s. And then I was looking around because I was like, damn, who can I link to? Because I need to put this in the newsletter. Because I want everyone to know this sort of idea. And no one had written, like, a good piece about it yet. And I was like, if I must, like, I will write the defining piece.
For my generation. But can you give, for people who haven't read the newsletter or are not quite sure what we're babbling on about, can you give a wee synopsis?
Yeah. Right now, I'm 25, right? You're 27.
Famously
27. And I will be the first to put my hand up and say, I am not acting like a 25-year-old out here. Like, I am watching The Summer I Turned Pretty. I am listening to the Camp Rock and Lemonade Mouth soundtracks on repeat. I am obviously reading Chicken Soup for the teenage soul. I am making friendship bracelets, going to Barbie. You know, I'm doing all these things. We're all doing all these things that are like... could be seen as healing your inner child, but even better, they're just like reclaiming your teenage years. But I feel like without all that hard shit that you go through as a teenager, you're like, I have a little bit of disposable income. I sort of am a bit more therapized And now I just want to go and enjoy being a teenager, but I'm in my 20s. And it's just, it's like a feeling, you know, it's this collective joy.
I think that this has connected with far more people than you realize. And I think you've done what you always do, which is tap into something that's going on. And the comments on this newsletter were so, so beautiful and lovely of just people being like, this is, I want to read one out because this one I really loved. I was so anxious in my teens. I didn't do a lot of teenage girl things. Now I'm 35 and I do not care. I feel like my 30s is the cooler version of my teenage years. I have my own money. I don't ask for permission to do things. I'm in therapy. I'm handling my anxiety and depression better, but I still get to love Taylor Swift, Grey's Anatomy, which came out when I'm in high school, wear oversized screen-printed t-shirts that I have dozens of, multiple layers of tank tops because what millennial didn't back in the day, and have sleepovers with my best girlfriends. And that's, I love it. That's it.
That is, honestly, that is fucking comment is like a better summary of what I wrote than what I just said. And I feel like there's so many layers, and I know this is like romanticizing our teenage years and romanticizing capitalism and consumerism. I know that. We're talking about joy here. So just like let us have a bit of joy. Two things can exist at once. We can know. We're smart girlies. We're smart out girlies. Here. But I feel like the whole idea of like sort of what that comment said was we're old enough now to not be ashamed of the things that we were ashamed for liking in our teenage years. And it's
this
just
as big. There's no fear about being basic.
Yes. Or mainstream or wearing color or wearing pink. And I got a few teenagers, I put this on Instagram. I got a few teenagers saying like, I read this now and it like, it just reminds me to enjoy my teenage years while I have them and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, how cool for you, actually, if you're a teenager right now, to have, like, no shame in just embracing all this shit. Like, obviously, they have other stuff they're going through that would be different to what we were. But I feel like being an individual is way more important to them than fitting in. And that's so cool. That is so cool.
That is definitely it. And I think as well, because I was going through, like, why this might be happening. And maybe it's a cyclical thing. Maybe this always happens and we're just of the age. But yeah. I remember a few weeks ago we were talking about this when you did that post about like they're romanticizing what we went through. And it was exactly this. It was love and pure heroin. Yeah. It was all these things that we grew up with that don't seem that long ago. Like when you wrote you were a teenager 6 years ago, I was like, oh my goodness. That's not long to already be romanticizing something that happened less than a decade ago. But I do think, and this is something we talked about last week, there's a whole chunk of people who missed out on, because of COVID particularly, on a lot of experiences. There's a whole bunch of school kids that missed out on going to their school balls or doing these things during COVID. There's a whole bunch of us that a large chunk of our like early mid-20s were in 3 years of lockdown, which like makes absolute sense why you suddenly want to revisit something that felt really good and easy.
Because people are saying that like nothing has made sense to them since March of 2020. Like they find it really hard to move forward because I guess there's like, you know how people, they get really sick and then they have health anxiety of getting sick again. I guess there's a sense of like, well, that happened once and that could happen again. So let me just like live, but like also let me not live in the future. Let me just like live in the past where things were better. I feel like maybe there's a bit of that. That's not a theory that I've thought about before on this podcast. But
well, lucky for you, Lucy, I've got several theories as to why this might be.
Oh my God, good, go. We need this.
One, which was a New York Times article that came out yesterday where they interviewed a bunch of Gen Z people on this like thing that basically no one's ever going to be able to own a house. Mm-hmm. And apparently the cost of your housing shouldn't exceed more than 30% of your monthly income, which is crazy.
When I go to Portugal, it's going to be like, it's going to be 50%.
Yeah. Yeah. Or I more. Don't know anyone who can find something when you're living in a major city like that. But this, I think, is the point that they're making. And I think a lot of people our age have been sold a future via the millennial icons of the time, which we talked about last week. I'm talking about Sex and the City. Like, this is a tired trope, but we know it well. It's like the messy millennial woman, right? Sex and the City, all these things of people that had the apartment in New York City, and this is what we were kind of meant to live up to, and like that was our future. Came into our 20s, that was very much not the case.
Yeah.
And I think we need something new to cling on to. And I think the messy millennial woman was the trope that worked for the generation above us. And it's given us, you know, Fleabag, Sally Rooney, Sex and the City, all these things. But we are just like, want to be a teenage girl.
Yes. And oh my God, Laura, that is actually such a good point. Is we were sort of, yeah, we were sold like Dan Humphrey from Gossip Girl being poor, but he lived in a huge Brooklyn apartment. Like iCarly, it was just her and her brother living together, but they had this huge loft. And it was like, we were sort of sold an incorrect view of what we were going to be growing into. Yeah, and now it's like, well, can't have that. Let's just like go back to what we've had once before, which is living with our parents or having to fucking spend a whole lot of money on rent. And then the rest of it, because we can't buy a house, is on like jelly shoes and nail polish and cute things that make you happy. That is so
true. I think it's a really interesting thing to think about. And like when you even look at the like what we're consuming, like you said, it's a lot of the remakes of things that were really popular when we were younger. There's a move away kind of from the messy millennial woman thing and into more of like a... I don't know how far it made it over there, but there was a show here called One Woman Show, which was kind of a parody of Fleabag, which was kind of doubling down on this idea, but this kind of, I don't know, basically just saying that we need different role models and role models that look different. And I think this could be a move towards that. I also think, and I don't know if you had this, but I definitely got told a lot that these were the best days of my life, probably between like 18 to 22. Like, I don't know how often I was told, enjoy this time, enjoy this time, enjoy this time, to the point where it really stressed me out because I was having a very bad time.
Yes.
For personal reasons. Yes. And constantly being told, this is the best time you're ever going to have. This is like, get out, do everything you ever want to do. Almost, I don't know. Now it's like when, like you said, when you're a little bit older, possibly you have more disposable income. It's like, hey, well, now I'm going to do that. Yeah. I don't know. What do you think?
I think that is so true. Like we were told, your teenage years are the best years of your life. And that was sort of reiterated by Lord's pure heroine. But then when we got to our 20s, it really moved to like, you know, your 20s are going to be the best years of your life. And then that was like melodrama. And it was like, okay, like, yeah. And now, I love this about the internet and about the trends that I'm seeing and things. Now it's like your 30s are the best years of your life. And then your 40s and then your 50s. Like, honestly, I feel like as hard as things are with the world for young people, the way that we reframe things to make ourselves feel better is like, I am proud to be living through it.
It's reframe.
One thing we're going to do is we're going to reframe and romanticize. And I'm like, do you know what? It's what we have to do to get through. It really feels like it's what we have to do to get through. Because I feel like if we asked our parents, if we asked our mums when they stopped being teenage girls, they would probably say at like 18. Like, well, my mum, she was married at 23. She had kids at 25 or whatever. I'm like, you didn't really get to do this because of the times back then. And like, yeah, you guys could buy a house and you could afford to have a family of six or whatever. And so that probably felt good at the time for you. But now you could be looking at young people being like, oh my God, they get to do all this. Like, why are young people going to all these concerts and how can they afford to be doing that? And it's like such different. I don't know. I've been thinking a lot about like, when would our parents have stopped feeling like teenagers? And it's way earlier than us.
That is really interesting. And it's, I think also what you're tapping into is it's like a luxury to be able to feel like a teenager as well in a lot of ways. And like,
yes,
there's one, this really I found quite fascinating. And it was talking about the rise of nostalgia, which I think in essence is what we're talking about here. And I feel like I've written about this 1,000 times about how I love nostalgia. Whenever the seasons start to turn, I get very emotional. But the New York Times last year reported that old technology is selling at an absolutely rapid rate. Things like Polaroids, Tamagotchis, nostalgia-driven movies.
Yep.
Which we know, right? We've seen this in the rise.
Yep.
So why all the nostalgia now? So they've done some research where they asked people to describe under what circumstances they become nostalgic, and the most frequent reported triggers were negative emotions, mood states, and in particular, feeling lonely, cue lockdown and isolation.
Mm.
The results were surprisingly straightforward. Those who read negative stories were subsequently more likely to engage in nostalgia than those who read neutral or more positive ones. In other words, nostalgia is a way of coping with distress by temporarily escaping the pain of the present.
Preach. That's what everyone's doing.
It's exactly what is going on right now. And as a result of engaging in kind of these recollections, though, people do actually experience a mood boost. It's shown that people feel more socially connected. They've got a greater sense that their lives are more meaningful. And I'll link this article because there's a lot more study in there. But I think it actually showed that in some ways it can improve well-being. I don't know to what extent you delve into living completely in the past, but I thought that was fascinating.
I was literally about to say, obviously we're not out here saying quit your jobs, get in bed and rewatch Zoe 101 and you'll feel good temporarily, but then you won't be able to keep paying for your Netflix subscription and shit like that. But I will say, like, if you can balance, there is nothing wrong with working your fucking corporate job and going home and having dinner and then wanting to put on, like, Confessions of a Teenage Drama Queen. Or for you, Confessions of a Shopaholic. Like,
I'm just...
like, we both have our confessions, right? Yeah, we get it. But I'm like, do you know what? Whatever it takes to get you through the day in this type of world, we're not going to shit on you for it. But yeah, I love that you've pointed out, I don't know how much we should be only living in the past.
Well, I think there's definitely, you know, there's a whole, and we've talked about this as well, it's like at the end of the day, capitalism's just throwing a lot of things at us. They probably want us to stay in bed rewatching, you know, episodes of whatever and not engaging with the real world. But I think, and we've talked about this a little bit before, like this idea of comfort things, be it comfort food, comfort people, comfort books, whatever it is, like, is very real. And I think for, like, is a genuine mood boost, especially when you're feeling lonely, and the sense of connection that it brings you, not just with the thing you're engaging with, but the community around the thing you're engaging with, like exactly what you're talking about with kind of teenage girlhood, is really interesting and a genuine connector for a lot of people.
And sort of while we're talking about a little bit about capitalism and they probably want us to go and watch all these things, they, as who the fuck are we even talking about when we say they probably want us to go and sit in bed and watch this, it is like genuinely they do, and they've tapped into this, because I'm just going to read you a few of the reboots. And yes, we're still going to do an episode on does everything need a reboot, because it's just such a good topic. But anyway, we've seen reboots in the past few years, especially during the pandemic when everyone was lonely and sort of needed something comforting, was like we have had iCarly, Zoe 101, Gossip Girl, Friends, reboots or reunions, I should say, Sex and the City, Gilmore Girls. Now we're getting all the Taylor Swift albums, like we're getting, and these aren't reboots, but it's like obviously Olivia Rodrigo is coming back hard with pure teenage nostalgia, like... Lord,
the Twilight references destroyed me.
Yes, a new Hunger Games, or like a precursor to the Hunger Games. It's like no one wants anything new. We just want things, an extension of things that have made us feel good in the past. And honestly,
a Willy Wonka with Timothy Chalamet. Did you see that?
Oh. Yeah, I did. And honestly, I'm going to eat that up.
Like, how many times have they rebooted Willy Wonka? I feel like I've seen the original.
Literally, it's like Roald Dahl no longer has any like references to fucking Charlie or Willy Wonka. It's like been taken 7 fucking steps out of his hands, which may not be the worst thing. But like, it's so, it's just, I don't know. It's just kind of nefarious, because it is like, did I feel this way on my own, or did they... the people that we keep referring to as, like, capitalism and the people that organise all this shit, did they want us to feel this way? And so now we're, like, we've got all these reboots, so of course we're like, oh, well, I'll go back and watch the original. And, oh, when I was watching the original, I was wearing this. So, like, that seems kind of cool again. And I don't know, it's like, did we feel this way on our own? Probably not, because nothing happens in a vacuum, but...
I think it's also interesting to know who is going to be, in the same way that everything is cyclical, who is going to be engaging with the stuff for the very first time, and will it hit the same way for that, like, generation of people who this isn't a reboot but is the genuine first
thing? Well, like that tweet we keep talking about, imagine discovering Pure Heroine for the first time. That would change my fucking life. I'm jealous of the people that got to do that. No, this is actually how I felt about listening to the 1975's music for the first time when I was fucking 25. I was like, how has this all been here and I've never listened to it? And now it's like a whole new world of music that I'm like, it's like my fucking favorite music. And yeah, I don't know. Will it land? Will all these, well, actually, the reboots, I don't think, will introduce people, will make people want to go back to the original shows, because the reboots are, like, usually really bad.
Oh, but they draw you in. I remember I hadn't watched Gilmore Girls ever, hadn't been interested in it, didn't understand it. And then when the reboot was getting marketed, I thought, I was going through exams at the time and I was having trouble sleeping and basically needed something to watch every night when I was going to bed. And I started watching the series basically so I would have it finished in time by the time the reboot came out.
Oh.
They got me.
And Gilmore Girls is such a good one, though. Okay, that's
pure comfort.
Okay. That's a good point. My mind has been changed on that because actually, even though I didn't like it, I also watched The Sex and the City, or a little bit of The Sex and the City.
Totally. I'm currently watching it, and we will review that very soon.
So?
Oh, honestly, for anyone listening, go listen also to Sentimental Garbage, their recap of the Sex and the City reboot, because, oh my goodness, it's brilliant. It's the best thing ever. I also just have, which I think is quite a nice way to tie this up, I went and found an old article from something that I'd written several years ago, where I interviewed three people on advice they'd give to their 20-something self. And there's some bits in here which I just thought, in light of doing this as well, it's just interesting because, A, the thing that everyone always says is wear sunscreen, which I just don't know how many times I've been told that in my life, but anyone...
Same, and I can't lie. I, like, don't most days. I do in the sun. I do if I'm going in the sun, everyone, and I know that I need to. But I just, for some reason, can't.
Well, every person under the sun would tell you.
Pun.
Kill me. But here's some bits of little cutie advice, which I just thought was very sweet. Travel. Lucy, this one's for you. Wherever you go, be where you are. Travel doesn't change you, but it does enrich you. You'll never regret any money spent on travel, even the hardest, most awful experiences. Something to remember in your visa applications. On health, everything is connected. Your mental, physical, spiritual health. Do things that ground you. Be with nature as much as you can. It will connect you to your whakapapa. Beautiful.
Preach that.
Love, every love is beautiful. Value every love and be careful with it. Your first love hurt you, but you'll be better for it. And from it, you'll know how to be a good love. Fall in love as often as it happens. Don't hold back. And I feel like that is romantic, familial, friendship, all love.
Yes.
And this is the last one on friendship, which I loved. Friendships are what provide the best things in life, the greatest places to live, the most fun holidays, my favorite jobs. They deserve looking after. Make sure you feel comfortable being your unfiltered self in a friendship. And don't forget that your relationship is also a friendship and needs the same kind of care and respect, which I think goes both ways. Again, I think a lot of the stuff, I always got stressed out when people would tell me, make the most of this time, do these things, here's the rules to live by. They honestly just fill me with anxiety, but... Mm-hmm. I think it is good sometimes to take stock and remember.
Yeah, and I think those, honestly, they were great. It sounds like you've, like, interviewed authors or something on those quotes, because
honestly,
I'm like,
they're all gorgeous people.
That's so fucking good. Well, everyone, if you're feeling bad or guilty about going back and living in your teenage years because the future is really scary and it's hard, I hope this has made you feel a little bit better, because we're all doing it together. And also, what's on your radar, Laura?
I actually, beautiful tie-in, I didn't have anything written down, but on my radar is, I have waited my whole life to see my favorite band in the world, Haim, play live. Haim, if you're listening, I love you. Of course you would be listening. I basically have somehow missed every single time they've played in the country that I've been in. I have just missed it. And I am seeing them in 2 weeks. And they announced that they're going to be essentially going through their very first album, Days Are Gone, which was the soundtrack to me and all of my teenage girls and our friendship. And two of my best friends are in London for it. We're all home girlies and we're going together and I am going to be feral. I cannot wait.
That is perfect.
That is all that's on my radar for the next 14 days.
Oh my God. That is so perfect for this episode and for you to get to relive your teenage self.
Honestly.
And they're playing the fucking, like, your teenage album. That's everything.
It's everything in one. Haim, if you're listening, we want to interview you.
Laura, especially.
I don't know when and I don't know how. I would pass out.
I know. They would go viral, so. So I want that to happen, obviously.
You are cold. Lucy, what is on your radar?
On my radar is, and this is very British, and it's very reliving or healing your teenage self, but have you ever watched My Mad Fat Diary?
No, but it is definitely something in my brain is going off.
Oh my God, it's like, it's based on a British woman's actual diaries, and it's a TV show, and it's got, I think, 3 seasons. I'm on to season 2. And it's just about this girl. She's in high school, and she had some mental health troubles, and she's just, like, everything's all fucked up, but she's just, like, living through high school, and it's, like, funny and British and sad and heartwarming and very coming of age, but in a way that is not sanitized because it's literally based on real diaries. And it's so good. And the actress that plays Lawyer Barbie in Barbie is the main actress from My Mad Fat Diary. And it's fucking good, bro. So everyone, go and watch it. I posted this on the Close Friends story and everyone that had seen it was viscerally like, this changed my life. I think it's like old. I think it was like 2009 or something, but it's so good. So mine's sort of on that same tangent as
it's
well.
It's giving Bridget Jones' Diary reboot.
Yes. Yes, it is, but it's like, again, you know, she's the messy millennial woman that we were told you don't want to be. She had a great job, a great flat, she had a great body, but she was told she was fucking fat, untalented, like poor. Anyway.
A lot to unpack.
I guess we should wrap it up there before we talk for 4 hours. But everyone, you can find Laura in the Geneva chat. She has a Shit You Should Cook About place that's really cute on there. I love it there.
I never want to leave there. It's the cutest place in the world.
It's so wholesome and it's like not overwhelming because everyone like isn't online at the same time. So you don't have to like, I don't know, be bombarded. It's really crazy. As I was talking about that, in my ear a little ding ding went off, which is the Geneva notification. So someone literally posted as we were talking about this and I kind of freaked out. I don't know if you could tell, but my... I started speaking weird. I was like, it's a weird... Oh, if you want to find the piece on being a teenage girl in your 20s, then come and read the newsletter, but we'll put it in the show notes. And if you want to read Laura's piece about the advice that you give to your 20-year-old self, we'll also put that in the show notes. And we will remember this time because I see your messages saying that someone's pieces aren't linked.
Someone forgets to link stuff and I don't know who it is.
And it's not Ruby.
It's really lazy.
Anyway, team, we love you and we'll see you next week.
Bye.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.